Welcome to Acts of Kitchen, the fortnightly podcast of food and cooking stories. My name's Alex, and this fortnight I've been cooking from a couple of new cookbooks, and I've been doing something different with breakfast, which, you know, not the most interesting of all topics, but I've quite enjoyed it. So let me start by telling you about that. For those of you who don't know me outside of me talking into your ears, I am a relatively organized person. Don't know if you've picked that up. I like to have things organized in advance. I like to be efficient, all those sorts of things. And I have discovered in the last little while ways of making breakfast more organized and, I guess, efficient. A while back, I went through a bit of a smoothie kick, not adding spinach and those sorts of things because I tried it once and it really didn't work for me. But I would make my smoothies the night before and have them in the fridge so that I just had to stir them and eat them the next morning, and I found that worked really well for me. It doesn't work quite so well with porridge, and I was on a very big porridge kick. But then I heard some Americans talking about this thing called fridge oats, and I was very curious about fridge oats. Fridge oats is a cold version of porridge, basically. You mix oats and milk or some other sort of liquid, roughly equal proportions, put them in the fridge the night before and then eat it the next day. So I tried this with just milk and oats, and look, it was all right, but it wasn't fantastic. And then I read about this version where you also grate up an apple, and yes, we are now talking about probably more effort than I would usually go to for breakfast. But you grate up an apple and put that with the oats and the milk the night before, maybe a bit of cinnamon. And the next morning, if you're going all out, you add a bit of coconut and maybe some nuts, and then you eat it. And yes, this recipe was called Apple Crumble Fridge Oats. I also add a dollop of jam because I have an enormous amount of jam, courtesy of my friend Kate. And I'm completely convinced. It's fantastic. It's delicious. The texture really works for me. And I'm pretty excited about a new thing to have for breakfast. So I have been having that a lot. And yes, it does mean grating up apples, and it is a pain in the bum. And I have discovered that my spice grinder does not work for grating apple, but I'm willing to put up with it, it turns out, because I'm enjoying it so much. Let me tell you about these two cookbooks that I've had to review. The first is called Thai Made Simple, Made Easy. It's in the same line as the Indian Made Easy book, which I got to review probably a year or so ago now. And it's really great. I've never cooked very much Thai food before. It's pretty straightforward. It really is Thai made easy, which probably means in some cases that it's not entirely authentic. But I've really enjoyed the tastes. I've really enjoyed the different flavor combinations. I've made quite a few salads from it, and I'm really looking forward to cooking more things from the book, which I think is a good sign. The other one I've been cooking from more recently, which I haven't got around to reviewing yet, is Simple by Diana Henry. And while I'm not convinced that it really is as simple, all of the recipes, as the name might suggest, this is a really good all-round cookbook with some really great recipes. It's got a good variety of recipes. It has an entire chapter on toast, which I'm intrigued by, and I plan on making some things from it in the next week or so. I just like that it's a bit of a quirky inclusion. I've made things like some salads from it, which have been really great, and a slow roasted lamb shoulder with mint and garlic and pomegranate molasses marinade, which was absolutely brilliant. And I also made posset for the first time. Posset is warmed up cream that is then allowed to steep with some sort of flavor inclusion. I used rosemary, lemon, and orange peel. And then you whisk in orange and lemon juice, and then you put it in the fridge in little individual glasses and it sets. I served it with blueberries and it was surprisingly delicious. Not convinced it's the best way to use cream if you're going to make a creamy dessert, but it worked well. I served it after that roast lamb and it was a nice complement to it. My interview this fortnight is with Richard, who works for Mount Zero Olives. Mount Zero Olives is an olive farm in the Grampians in Victoria, and Richard's got a really interesting story to tell about the place itself, about Mount Zero and their products, and about the uses to which olive oil can be put. I hope you enjoy it. Hi, Richard. Thank you so much for talking to me today.
Pleasure.
Now, you're the general manager at Mount Zero Olives in the Grampians here in Victoria. But before we talk about that, I wanted to ask you a little bit about your background. In particular, were you a particularly foodie family when you were growing up, or was food just something that you had?
It was definitely not something we just had. It was something that was pretty well considered. But it's funny, I wouldn't necessarily call us foodies. I grew up in Warrenwood in the outer eastern suburbs of Melbourne, and went to school at the Steiner School. So we had this very whole foods ethic to which existed in the family before we ever went to the school, but it was definitely that ethic of whole foods eating. For instance, we had Mum would pretty much bake all our bread from when we were kids, to the point where we had our own little stone mill that we'd be milling locally grown wheat to make a wholemeal flour for the bread. So there was always that connection with the ingredient. But to call us foodies was probably, I'm not sure if the term even existed then, but we weren't visiting restaurants. We weren't, you know, searching for the latest recipe. We were keen gardeners and keen consumers of whole foods and local produce.
I think that milling your own flour and baking it these days means that you are definitely a foodie family.
Yeah.
Given the context at the Steiner School, was your family regarded as a bit out there for doing that, or were there lots of other families who were taking those sorts of steps with food?
Oh, certainly in that community, in the Steiner community, I think we were, you know, more of the norm than anything. But in the broader community and I guess even my cousins and uncles and aunts, yeah, I think certainly a little bit out there, a little bit strange. I remember, you know, going to my cousin's birthday at McDonald's, I think, and it was the first time I'd ever been, and I think almost the last time I've ever been. And that's kind of, you know, the different world we grew up in.
Did that extend to also having a veggie patch at home?
Yeah, very much so. Veggie patch. My sister, for her 18th birthday, I think, was given 4 geese.
Wow.
Yeah, a little bit, outside of the norm.
That's fantastic. Were you interested in the veggie patch and cooking and those sorts of things, or was it just what your parents did?
Yeah, look, I remember one year as a, you know, those little cherry plums that seem to grow, you know, they make beautiful cherry blossom around the place, but seem to grow widely in Melbourne. I remember we had quite a few of those on our property. And I remember one year making a plum jam for everyone for Christmas out of those, which was, I don't know how palatable it might have been, but I was pretty young and pretty keen. So, yeah, definitely keen on cooking and gardening. Always maybe a little bit entrepreneurial. Like, a friend and I would actually start selling some of the produce that we were growing in our backyard, you know, lettuces and beans and things from that we'd grow and sell to neighbours and around the area.
I was actually just reading a biography of Nancy Wake the other day. She was the woman who helped with the French Resistance during World War II.
Yeah, absolutely. The little mouse.
The white mouse, something like
that. The white mouse, yeah.
But it was talking about how when she was a young girl, in order to get some money, she was selling produce from her mother's garden without her mother knowing about it. her mother went down to the vegetable store and ended up buying them back without realising it.
Oh, no. Way.
So I hope you had your parents' permission.
Yeah, no, all good on that one.
So, as I said today, you work at and for Mount Zero Olives. Am I right in thinking that it was your parents who started Mount Zero Olives?
Yes, yeah, that's right. So we grew up in the eastern suburbs of Melbourne, and then when I was just finishing school, Mum and Dad bought the olive grove, which was, I think, even just marketed as a bush block, because it literally, we're bordered by three sides, the national park, and the national park had basically overtaken what was a beautiful olive grove planted in the late 40s to the point where you could hardly see the olive trees. So when they found it, they instantly fell in love, and it was a very romantic rather than pragmatic or business-minded decision to buy it. But they bought it and then spent the next 5 years basically revealing the olive trees by, you know, chainsaw and tractor and turning it into a productive olive grove, which, you know, certainly had its challenges, not only by the scrub that had crept in around it, but also the environment up there. It's very dry, and we've had, you know, our fair share of droughts between 1990 and sort of around 2005 was 10 years of really, really tough times. But yeah, they're tenacious amongst a number of other qualities, and sort of certainly saw them through.
Was it a surprise that your parents would do that, or was that something that they had always half thought about doing?
Surprise probably not. It was certainly, I think my brother and sister as well, we've all fell in love with the place and kind of encouraged them to do it. But it was a romantic notion more than anything else. But I guess my mother grew up on a dairy farm in the Yarra Valley, and my father spent the last years of his high school living on an apple orchard in Red Hill. So they've both come from, well, dad from a horticultural background and mum from a farming background originally. So I guess it's no surprise that they wanted to head back that way.
And what about you? Have you been kind of working at Mount Zero Olives for that whole time, or have you moved away and come back?
Yeah, so no, I kind of moved away and came back, but never very far. I straight out of school studied in applied science, but all through that degree, I was, always underneath my stairs in Fitzroy. I had a number of basically our little warehouse of produce that I would go and sell in spare time to various retailers, and not really restaurants in those days, but yeah, more retail. And then straight out of uni, I'd more or less planned to go and do some sort of resource management or something to that effect, but fell into a job with our distributor at the time, wholesaling our produce and a number of other cheeses and other local Australian produce. And from that point, never really went away from food. So I worked for a couple of different food distributors and got a bit of an understanding of the business side and also a passion for the produce. And then back in, I think it was about 2005, said, we can do this. If we're really going to make a run of it, we need to meet the customer and do our own distribution. So that's when we set up our own small warehouse in Melbourne and began marketing direct to restaurants and direct to retailers rather than relying on, I guess, the traditional distribution chain of connecting.
Yeah, I was going to ask what you see as, I guess, the key challenges when it comes to marketing food, because I guess some of the main things that you're selling are olives and olive oil. And I think, I mean, if you go to, you know, your supermarket in Melbourne, there's just such an enormous range of olive oil in particular. What do you see as the challenge in making people understand why your product is like the interesting one or the best one?
Yeah, it's a challenge, it certainly is. But it's actually changed a lot over the last, 20 years since we've been doing it. So when we started, we'd sign up for 10 days at doing, 10 days of 14-hour day at the Royal Melbourne Show. And we'd get people coming through, because that was before farmers markets, obviously, and we'd get people coming through. And the Italians and the European heritage would look at it and totally understand and then look at me and go, but why would I buy it from you, Skippy? and kind of move on. And the local audience would, the Anglo community would look at it and go, oil and bread, what would I do with that? And they'd move on. And so the challenge was really trying to educate people about local produce and extra virgin olive oil. More recently, it's not become so much about the education. It's about become being heard. There are so many small and large producers now in Australia that getting your product out there and is really tough. And we've chosen to do it without going into the major supermarkets, where I think we just would be swallowed up and not really survive. So we've done it through restaurants, and thankfully we've had some really loyal and supportive restaurateurs and chefs, and who can, you know, instantly taste the quality, and then it becomes a matter of service and price. And we've been able to offer a pretty competitive offering there by doing our own distribution, by being there the next day when they need a delivery, which has taken a fair bit of work. It's actually been really fun because we've found some really good partners and friends in doing that.
Awesome. Do you think that Australia, and I guess Victoria in particular, has become more interested or more informed about using local produce in the last few years?
Yeah, definitely more interested and more informed. It's one of those things where there's a lot of talk and a lot of people, you know, the whole farmers market revolution has been fantastic, and there are some rusted on farmers market customers. But there's, you know, you only have to look at, you know, the social media, and there's lots of people out there that talk a lot about it, but probably when it comes to maybe purchasing or putting it in their weekly or monthly shop, maybe still buy the supermarket product. So the education is there and the will is there. I think we've still got a bit of a challenge in bringing everyone across. But, I mean, for a relatively small producer, we only have to have that 5 or 10% to come our way anyway.
That does sound like a really small proportion, but I guess that's, as you say, you're a small producer. So that, do you end up selling all that you produce each year? Or do you have
surplus? Yes, yeah.
Right,
no,
that's
we
cool.
do. Yeah, no, it's great. To the point where we're working with a number of other local olive producers for producing oil and olives. And the key with extra virgin olive oil is it's a fresh product. So by the time harvest comes around in May next year, we want to be very close to being having empty tanks, so that we're not having to sell something that's, you know, you're paying a premium for, but at that time probably has lost most of its premium in terms of quality and flavour. So by June, we want to be marketing and selling the fresh new season's product.
Yeah, I don't think I'd ever really thought about olive oil as something that had obviously it has a use-by date or a best-before date, but I'd never thought about it as something that you should consume as a fresh product.
Yeah, it's essentially, and that's sort of the education element as well. It really is a fruit juice, you know. It's something that you're literally crushing fresh fruit to produce a really fresh, flavoursome oil, rather than crushing to produce a lubricant or you know, just something, a tool in cooking, because it is an inherent flavour profile that other than the health benefits, you're really bringing flavour to what you're cooking. So having it fresh and having it from a producer that's done everything they can to maintain that vitality and flavour is sort of the key element.
And do you cook much yourself these days, Richard?
I do. I love cooking, absolutely. And for me, sort of, it's the simple is best sort of motto, you know, whether it be three or four or five ingredients, but great quality ingredients and done really simply.
I presume you cook with olive oil fairly often.
Absolutely. I don't think we really have any other oil in the house, but that's a luxury, I guess, an oil producer can afford.
Tell me, would there be ways that you use olive oil that might surprise other people who aren't as familiar with what it can do?
Look, I guess I use it for absolutely everything. A lot of people are afraid to fry or actually heat and cook with olive oil. And if you look to the Mediterranean diet, where, you know, it's lauded as being the healthiest diet in the world, olive oil is one of the key pillars of that. And they haven't been using coconut oil there. They haven't been using anything else. And sure, they heat their product. They cook and deep fry and do all the same things that we do with other oils. So that's one thing I'd certainly encourage people. Yes, it's got a slightly lower smoke point, but it's only a matter of 10 degrees or so. So it's not, you know, maybe if you're wok frying, you might want to think about a seed oil, but everything else, it's a fabulous oil to be using. On your toast for breakfast, it's pretty good. And we also press some agrumato oils, which basically means we put citrus through the press at the same time as the olive. And so you come up with a really beautiful, zesty lemon oil or a mandarin or lime flavoured oil that's done in a traditional organic sense of throwing the fresh fruit in together with the olives. And oh, right. I use that in baking as well. So you can make a beautiful lemon tart or lemon cake, but by replacing the butter with the lemon oil, and it's delicious.
Now there's an interesting idea. I like that a lot. One of the other things that you guys sell, which I think is just one of the most fabulous products that you've got, to be honest, is the Pink Lake salt. I did a course a couple of months ago with learning how to do sourdough, and the person there was saying I think they buy the Pink Lake salt by enormous buckets, which is
was quite that a Red Beard Bakery? Is
yes,
that where
it
you did
was.
The course? Yeah, great. Yeah,
it was a very, you know, singing your praises a lot. Do you guys actually go and is it Mount Zero Olive people who are getting the salt? Because I understand the Pink Lake is under Indigenous custodianship. So how does that work?
Essentially, the idea of harvesting the salt was my mother Jane's. It is Crown land, and if you've been to Dimboola or Western Victoria, it's a beautiful big Pink Lake just on the edge of the Western Highway as you head towards South Australia. But the flavour and the colour is absolutely gorgeous. And Mum worked really hard with the various levels of government in order to get permission to get on there and literally by hand scrape off the small tonnage that we do. But key to that was reaching out and partnering with the Barangigadjin Land Council, the traditional owners of the lake and the local area. And so as such, really the only labour on the lake is my father, my 74-year-old father, who goes out there and still works incredibly hard, and the traditional owners. So there's four or five or six out there at any one time harvesting, and it's all literally just scraped off the surface. There's a little bit of rolling dust across the surface of the lake, and we scrape that back to the sort of this beautiful salmon pink salt bed, and then scrape off about literally half an inch from the surface of that, spread over an area of probably, you know, the equivalent of a couple of tennis courts, and that gives us our tonnage, which is probably 20 to 30 tonnes a year that we then bring down to Melbourne and mill down to being fine or coarse or whatever size, and that ends up on lots of cafe tables and through our bakery network and some of our retailers as well.
Wow, that's remarkably labour-intensive.
Oh, it is. But it's about a 2 to 3 week harvest period, so it's not massive. And we do that sort of mid-autumn before the winter rains have come and filled the lake, and after the heat of the summer has gone, because as you can imagine, getting out there with the glare off the salt, it can be a really hot and dry environment. So getting that sweet spot of cooler weather before the rain is critical.
And why was your mum so keen to have it as a product?
I think she just recognised the beauty of the product, and also the flavour, the benefit of having an unrefined mineral salt. So it's still got its balance of minerals, which from a health perspective is going to be much better than anything reduced to, you know, a sodium chloride or anything that's reduced to its pure chemical form is going to be probably not as good for you as something that's in its original unrefined form. And finally, the partnership with local Indigenous community became a real passion, and she made some really strong friendships out of that. In one, lobbying to get it over the line, but secondly, in the actual delivery of the project as well.
Fantastic, and I really like the design and all of that. The product itself is really fantastic. So
yeah, thank you. The design is from Auntie Nancy, who's an elder in the community, and she put forward that artwork. We had a little competition in the community to see if anyone wanted to put forward any artwork to go on the packaging, and that one was just fantastic. It was really reflective of she calls it Bush Tucker, and there's a goanna and a tortoise on the depicted in sort of line drawing, and it's absolutely stunning presentation of what she literally did on country out there.
And today for your family, is food still something that's important for you as a family, or are you a bit over it by the time you get to the end of the day?
No. It's still very important. You know, we all have our secret little takeaway devices, there's nothing better than getting or having an excuse to bring people around the table and go out and really treat yourself on some great produce. So yeah, and no, I love to have a big cook up as well.
Well, Richard, thank you so much for talking to me today.
Pleasure. Thank you.
Thanks for listening. You can send feedback to actsofkitchen@gmail.com. Please consider leaving a review on iTunes to help other people find me, and check out my Patreon page too. Happy cooking.